My guest at this time is Garry Kasparov, longtime chess grandmaster who many believe to be the greatest player of all time. He is now a fierce advocate for democratic reforms in Russia and a staunch critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin. He is also the author of Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. The book is now available in paperback. Mr. Kasparov joins me today to discuss the controversy surrounding former U.S. National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and his contacts with the Russian government during the transition and reportedly during the campaign as well. And, sir, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for inviting me, Greg.
What do you believe Vladimir Putin is after with what we've seen him allegedly up to in recent months, from the meddling in the election to the more recent conversations and involvement with the new administration?
Meddling in the U.S. election was not just a unique exercise for Putin. We could see him doing the same things in Europe for quite a while. Now he's attacking electoral institutions in Holland, in France, in Germany, in Italy. He was behind the Brexit campaign in the U.K., Italian referendum, the referendum in Holland earlier last year. So Putin's main goal was, and still is, to undermine the very concept of democracy, of free and fair elections, by, you know, demonstrating that this election process, you know, could be jeopardized by intervention of foreign power, by fake news, and also by supporting candidates who, as Putin believes, will help him to destroy status quo and to spread chaos.
How does, let's say, Britain, for example, Britain doing the Brexit, leaving the EU, Italians are rejecting that referendum, how does that strengthen Putin?
Look, Putin's agenda is very simple. He has to stay in power for the rest of his life. But staying in power for a dictator is not just, you know, as elementary as it may look for people in the free world. You always have to come up with a new narrative, with kind of a legend that you can sell to the brainwashed population. While economy is no longer serving Putin well, Russian economy is in a state of free fall. The oil prices are no longer as high as they used to be. So Putin needs something new. And he made a very, you know, simple choice, typical for every dictator, after losing sort of domestic agenda, is replacing it by a very aggressive foreign policy. His aggression against Ukraine, annexation of Crimea, fomenting a war in eastern Ukraine, his support of his client, Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad, his meddling in internal affairs of many European countries. You know, it created a new staple for Putin's domestic propaganda. Vladimir Putin is fighting the free world, which is being presented on Russian media as an evil threatening Mother Russia, and Putin is an indispensable leader who is the only chance for Russia to survive in such unfriendly surrounding. But dealing with institutions like NATO, European Union, is quite tough because Russian economy is not, you know, as big and powerful as the Soviet Union. Russian military is also a pale shadow of what Soviet Union had. So typically for a KGB agent, Putin looks for ways to divide the opposition. And of course, anything that helps him to advance this agenda works for him. That's why Putin supports both ultra-nationalist groups in Europe on the right side, but also the radical left, because both groups are being seen as enemies of the mainstream political parties and enemies of the institutions like NATO and EU. And of course, what Donald Trump has been saying throughout his campaign and during the transition period, and even repeated a few times while being the president of the United States, also was very positive for Putin's plans, because Donald Trump has criticized EU, some European nations, European leaders like Angela Merkel, and of course expressed his doubts about values of preserving NATO.
We're talking with Garry Kasparov. The book is Winter is Coming. And sir, what do you think his goal is with respect to the U.S. right now? Is Putin trying to get specific concessions out of this administration, or does he just want the U.S. to look the other way when it comes to his ambitions, territorial or otherwise?
It's one depends on another. You know, looking the other way means making concessions, because if United States for some reason, decide to renege on its traditional alliances and will leave Eastern Europeans just facing Russian threat without U.S. backing, that means that Putin will have free hands to influence many of these countries, currently NATO members, members of EU, even without using a direct military force. Because we should remember, he's a KGB guy. So that's why he always looks for kind of hybrid war, clandestine operations. And without America's full commitment to NATO and to global security, Putin will definitely have opportunities to influence these countries in his favor. One of his main goals now, maybe the main goal, is to lift sanctions, because sanctions are hurting Putin badly at home, since, you know, nobody knows for how long a Russian population, you know, can tolerate this economic hardship. So that's why bringing Putin's friends or political allies into power, you know, from alt-right or radical left in Europe, it's Putin's, you know, Putin's big hope. And of course, without the United States taking a traditionally active role in preserving global security, Putin will have a big chance to succeed.
What do you see as his ambitions? And I guess I'm speaking specifically about territorial ambitions. We've obviously talked about Crimea and what's happening in Ukraine. There's been some talk about ambitions in the Baltics. You mentioned Eastern Europe, that's under the shield of NATO in the U.S. at the moment. Just how aggressive do you expect him to get if he has the opportunity?
I'm not sure that territorial aggression is the big priority for Putin, because, you know, gaining more territory means that you have to spend more money, and of course, you know, you'll be facing new sanctions and more resistance. What Putin needs is the global recognition of his status as someone equal to the United States president, someone who, you know, calls the shots, someone who decides every crisis in the world, because staying at home, staying in power at home in Russia, Putin needs the image of a strong, invincible leader. He knows that dictator can afford many mistakes except one. He cannot afford to look weak. So that's why any time when Putin is seen as a victor of, you know, preserving Bashar al-Assad, after Obama said Assad must go, but Putin said no, and Assad's still there. After everybody talks about Putin's meddling with U.S. elections and helping one candidate against another, that all these things, they are boosting Putin's image in among Russian elites. And we know from history that nobody attacks dictator when dictator looks strong and is at helm of his power.
Let's talk a little bit about Trump now. You've been very critical of President Trump as well. Is it more for his reluctance to criticize Putin, or are there specific actions and statements that concern you most?
So my original concerns were connected to Russia, of course, because what I could see throughout the campaign is that Trump criticized everyone and everything. He criticized his fellow Republicans, his Democratic opponents. He criticized NATO. He criticized U.S. elections. He criticized Meryl Streep. You name it, endless list. But he has never criticized Vladimir Putin. And he always found some words, you know, to defend Putin's dismal record in human rights and tried to pretend that Vladimir Putin was a legitimate leader who could make, you know, a deal with the United States for mutual benefits. Then, of course, I was worried about Trump's sympathy, affinity to strongmen and to dictators. Remember in 1989, he was very complimentary about Chinese communists after Tiananmen massacre. Again, throughout campaign and even now in the Oval Office, Trump made quite a few statements showing, if not contempt, but his annoyance with democratic institutions that are built to limit the power of the executive office.
You made some headlines in the past couple of days. You did an interview with CNBC and where you said the goal for those who don't like Trump is to make him look like a loser until his own party turns on him. Given the fact that he'll probably be president for at least 4 years, is that the right approach, or is it better to try and convince him of where he's wrong in your estimation?
Look, you know, we don't know what happens with Trump presidency, because, you know, there's just 26 days, and we already had so many scandals and conflicts and even one, you know, high-rank resignation. So Trump has a unique ability of creating enemies and problems. Obviously, as you know, some strong points, and we don't know what will emerge out of his presidency. But since we already saw his conflict with the judicial branch, so I think it's very important, you know, to demonstrate to him that these institutions are untouchable. And if he wants to be successful president, he should change his behavior. And from my experience, I can tell my friends in America that they have to protest when they have this opportunity. You'd better, you know, overreact now, because in some instances, you know, you will discover yourself in a very unpleasant situation when it's too late to protest. I don't think there's a real threat for democratic institutions in America, but these institutions don't exist in vacuum. It's very important that people exercise their rights. And I was very pleased to see the latest development here, where, you know, judicial system, you know, intervened by changing, you know, the situation with this travel ban, but also with a free press, you know, holding administration accountable. And by the way, that sends a strong message to all other countries in the world, including Russia or other dictatorships, because people could see there, thanks to Twitter, Facebook, and other social media devices, people could see that democracy is kind of a living institution. And even President of the United States, you know, should obey the decision of the court. And I think it's one of the greatest lessons of the sort of the latest development of democracy worldwide. And you know, for that we should be grateful for Trump's, you know, aggressive actions, sometimes brazen actions, because it shows that U.S. democracy is resilient.
What do you believe is the right approach for the U.S. foreign policy towards Russia? President Obama had the reset button. You were very critical of him as well in terms of how he responded to what happened in Crimea and Ukraine and other actions by the Russians. Trump is saying it makes more sense to have better relations than worse relations. What's the most effective way to have relations with Moscow that would be beneficial to the United States?
Look, we have plenty of lessons from history we can draw conclusions from. Now, we could look at Obama and also Bush 43. They both tried and they both failed, especially Obama, because at the time when Obama tried to push this reset button and tried to be flexible, as he said, in dealing with Russia, Putin already shifted from his early motion of looking for friendship in the world, looking for friends among foreign democratic leaders, into the stage where he needed enemies, you know, to strengthen his grip and power at home. And Donald Trump should simply recognize that the United States and the President of the United States is the leader of the free world. And it has, you know, responsibilities of preserving this world order. And it's not just to help other countries. It's also to boost Americans' interests worldwide, because American corporations as the prime beneficiaries of the globalization. And in the world of total globalizations touching, you know, almost every aspect of our life, I think it's very naive, at least, to think about America looking inward. So there are certain things that cannot be changed. And while dealing with Russia, China, Iran, any other country, of course, President of the United States must look at the American interests. But there's no way you can win as an American leader by cutting deals with Russia at the expense of American traditional allies, or at the expense of the values, values that helped America to win the Cold War and to spread its influence worldwide. So if Russia wants to have good relations with America, fine. But so far, Putin demonstrates that his interest is to step up confrontation, and only he's willing to accept concessions, not real real negotiations. Countries like Russia, which violated international order, and it's, you know, had a first annexation of the territory of neighboring countries since 1945 in Europe, I mean, these countries should be treated accordingly, and any attempt to show weakness by, you know, being an appeaser, that what Obama did, you know, is always treated by Putin as an invitation to continue his aggression.
Last question, sir, before we let you go. If you had the chance to speak directly to the president for a couple minutes or maybe even a little bit longer, what would you stress to him about Putin?
Look, again, I would urge him to look at Putin's record. It's not what I said or somebody else said. Vladimir Putin has a record. It's a KGB record. And if president takes time, I think it will be more than 2 minutes, probably more than 30 minutes. But since it's so important, you know, he should study Putin's record. And to understand that, you know, Vladimir Putin always had ideas about rebuilding Soviet influence. This is the man who said the collapse of the Soviet Union was the greatest geopolitical disaster of the 20th century. This is the man who said once KGB is always KGB. And I can go on and on. Study Putin's record and realize that Vladimir Putin's strategic goals of staying in power, you know, forever and boosting his, you know, Russian imperialistic traditions has nothing to do with the global security. And there's only one way to deal with that, and it's to follow the footsteps of great predecessors who were in the Oval Office after World War II and who helped us to beat Soviet communism.
Well, sir, I know as a critic, a Russian critic of Vladimir Putin, there is a danger to speaking out against him so vigorously, and we thank you for doing so freely, and we thank you for your time today. Best of luck with the paperback version of your book.
Thank you, Ron, Greg. Thank you.
Garry Kasparov, longtime chess grandmaster. He's now a fierce advocate for democratic reforms in Russia and a staunch critic of Vladimir Putin. His book, Winter is Coming, now available in paperback. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.